Good evening, everyone. This is Annie Chipetta. We are here tonight at a book launch for Behind Our Eyes, celebrating the third anthology, Behind Our Eyes 3, A Literary Sunburst. Take it away, Mary Jo.
Hi, everyone. To begin with, I'm going to give a little bit of history of how the anthology came to be. I feel like it's been a long road. Back in the summer of 2017, Marilyn and Kate and I started to talk about what a third anthology might look like. One of our former presidents, Bobby Lachance, had done a lot of fundraising and she really raised a lot of money. And her dream was for us to have a third anthology. And also, she made sure that money was set aside specifically for an anthology. Sadly, she passed away before we even started talking about an anthology. So we wanted to make sure that somehow it would happen. So once we started to talk about, yes, we need to do this, and we started to have some ideas, we went to Behind Our Eyes and asked if anybody wanted to join a steering committee to talk about working on an anthology. And at that point, Valerie Marino and Brad Carello joined us to form the steering committee. So from August through sometime in November, we worked having meetings probably once a week or once every other week, probably three times a month, talking about what selections for magnets and ladders might be in the anthology. We made lists, endless lists. And Kate was really good about organizing the lists and alphabetizing them and trying to sort them in categories and, by selection and by author, thank goodness. But we were taking selections from magnets and ladders, primarily from 2013 forward at that point. But we did look at some pieces from 2012 also. And by November, our massive list probably had 500 or 600 selections, believe it or not, got narrowed down to 200, and then we needed to narrow it down even further. And I'm not sure what the final number was. But at that point, we went back to the Behind Our Eyes community and asked for committee members. We decided on six rough sections that we would have. We asked for community members to work with us on selecting from those pieces what might be selections for the anthology. And one of the things that we talked about having was a section with recipes. And I'm not going to talk a whole lot about that because that's Kate's section and she's going to talk about that. But we thought that would be something different to what the other anthologies had to offer. So there, that adds some uniqueness. So that was one of the sections that we needed committee members for, along with the other five sections. So a number of Behind Our Eyes members joined us to evaluate all of those pieces. Then we went to the authors and said, these pieces were in Magnets and Ladders. Would you consider having them in the anthology? Most people said, yes, I'd love to have this in the anthology. Some people said no, primarily because they knew at that point that we were also going to be opening up for new submissions for the anthology. Because we had so many pieces that we wanted in the anthology, or so many pieces that were possibilities, we limited the number of selections that each author could have in the book to three per author. And so some people were thinking, well, no, I'd really like to have something new published in the book. And so they decided not to have some of their previously published work in. So we again took some new submissions and then those went back to the committees. And then we made our final selections, what would actually go into the book. Then we had our six sections and we began editing and copy editing and figuring out order and all of those things. So the anthology is written by authors with disabilities, obviously, but it isn't about just disability. There, it's not the theme. It comes up in a number of the pieces. Some of the pieces are specifically about struggles with disabilities or how people have overcome disability, but it's also a lot more than that. It's life experiences in many ways. In the end, we ended up with 99 selections in six sections. And those sections are, okay, we have cords and brushes under the umbrella, not what I expected, the literary smorgasbord, looking back, and whispers in the grass. And each section has an overall theme. The other thing that we looked at were pieces that would match up well together, that would play off each other, would relate in some way together. We placed them in the sections so that they wouldn't be exactly alike, but that they would go together. Obviously, sometimes a piece next to another piece is totally not related, but we would look at the best placement for the pieces next to one another so that they weren't just alphabetized, they had some sort of a connection. So once we had all that, we needed to have a title for the book. So again, we went back to the Behind Our Eyes membership and we asked for ideas for the title. And I think we had something like 35 names that were presented. And then the steering committee, the five of us went through and we picked, I think we each picked our five favorites or our three favorites, I forget which, but we all picked our favorites. And in the end, I think we had like seven or eight that were the top choices out of the 35. And then we took those back to the Behind Our Eyes community and let them vote again on those choices. And that's how we came up with the title, Behind Our Eyes 3. We knew we wanted Behind Our Eyes 3, but then we wanted the rest of it. So we had Behind Our Eyes 3, A Literary Sunburst. And if I remember right, that was the title that Marilyn had suggested.
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Okay. So then we needed to have artwork for the cover. And being that a lot of us are not the best at picking out art, thankfully, Kate and her husband David found some wonderful artwork. And now I don't know how well we want to trust Be My AI, because sometimes AIs hallucinate. Had a few experiences with that lately. But according to Be My AI, it says that the image is a book cover. The title of the book is Be My Eyes 3, A Literary Sunburst. And then it says the subtitle reads, Third Literary Anthology of Stories, Poems, and Essays by Writers with Disabilities. The book is edited by Mary Jo Lord. The background of the cover is gray. The text is yellow. There is an image of a bright, fiery sunburst showing a spark of activity of orange and yellow colors. So, if there's anybody sighted here that wants to add to that description.
I think that's pretty good.
Okay. All right. And then eventually we needed to have a endorsement for the back cover, and Kelly Sargent, who had been recently published in Magnets and Ladders. She's a deaf author, is a poet. She's also an editor, wrote a very nice blurb for the back cover. And a lot of what Kelly wrote was in the invitation. So you'll have an idea of what she wrote. The first section is Chords and Brushes. And this section features music, visual art and some other art type pieces. And it opens with the Saga of Kofi, the section, the Saga of Kofi. It's a poem by Kevin Brown. And it's a drum beating, foot stomping kind of poem. It's really a musical beat, and it's unlike any of the other poems in the section. And it ends with John Justice's memoir, A Song for Adrian, which shows it has a little bit of a Christmas flair, but it shows a special connection between him and a mental patient in the hospital where he was tuning a piano. And it was a favorite of a lot of Magnets and Ladders readers. And let's see, some other pieces that were featured in that section. Valerie had Watching My Dream Keeper on late night TV. And then Brad had John Coltrane's My Favorite Things. The two of those pieces show in different ways how young people are learning to really appreciate and discover music. And then we had some art pieces, Notes from the Brock Museum by Linda McKinney Lambert, and The Difference Between Me and We by Heather J. Kirk. When you read them, you feel like you're walking through an art exhibit. All of the pictures and the paintings are so well described. Now I'm going to turn it over to Marilyn, and she's going to talk about the next section, Under the Umbrella.
Okay, thanks, Mary Jo. When you hear the title, Under the Umbrella, you assume you're going to get a lot of stories about rain. Well, over half of these pieces in the section do mention rain, but that's more or less a coincidence that helped us choose the title. The umbrella really is a kind of a group classification for pieces about people who either need or get or are seeking some protection or some support. And we had several sub-themes that which you will see as I talk a little more about this section. And we combined them in that way in order to present a collection of different themes, but with a general thought of, okay, we're all really under the same umbrella. Let's talk about a couple of rain pieces first. Deanna Noriega takes us on a cross-country journey about rain. And the first thing we see or experience or know about is pineapple rain. You'll have to read it to find out. Heather Kirk has a trick played on her by Mother Nature about some rain. Now we're going to take a little journey back into history. And we're going to talk about Terry Wynott's beautiful poem about the Tuskegee Airmen and their journey to receive recognition and equality for their service to the United States. That was the first journey into history. The next piece in that line is Mary Jo's piece about Laika, sweet little puppy in Russia, who was the first creature in space. And that piece sets the stage for Nancy Scott, our NASA guru. She loves launches and landings and lives and dies for NASA. And she missed a very vital part of space history, the crash of the Columbia. And she vowed to never miss another one, formed a close friendship with someone who didn't understand space jargon, but liked watching what was going on. They teamed up, and her friend narrates with description better than what you might expect from the NASA people. And Nancy provides all the jargon explanations to make it a more meaningful thing for both of them, more touches the heart of both of them. Bobby LaChance called one of our umbrella agencies, called law enforcement, to try to get some help when she had an unexpected visitor at her door. That one turned into a rather humorous situation and gets us back on a little humorous footing for the rest of the section. However, next we go to Elizabeth Fioriti's piece about carolers, and she is a teacher with them at a nursing home Christmas concert. Got waving of hands. That's where we start our waving of hands and moving of hands subsection. Eating candy canes, waving at the children, various things. And she's concerned about what notes they're hitting, but they're not at all concerned. They're just having a good time. And she's impressed with the thought that the innocence is beautiful. The children don't know all the hard things that the nursing home patients have probably been through in life, such as medical incidences, racial discrimination, immigration problems, and the like. But she is not about to ruin their joy at this Christmas event. We also get into the moving of hands with sign language and with Braille. And we hear from two people who know what they're talking about in talking about learning to do both of those behaviors so that people can better communicate. We also have two people. One is Nan Scott, who are building sandcastles on a beach setting and knowing that it's a moment in time, that only the waves can decide how long that moment will last. Remember running through the sprinkler on a hot summer's afternoon and enjoying the artificial rain, if you will? Well, Alice Massa and Deanne Lyons, in a group poem or team poem, teach children how to create a rainbow in that setting with one of their poems. Isn't that what we all really wish for, is that when we have a little rain in our lives or see it in the world, we wish we could find that beautiful rainbow? Come and turn it back to Mary Jo for the next section.
Okay. And I forgot to mention, and you know, I want to bring it up in this section, so I'm going to go back to my last section real quickly. There were 15 selections in the cords and brushes. And in the next section, not what I expected, there are 12. And this section is kind of, well, there's a lot of supernatural, science fiction-y kind of pieces. And in this section, there are 10 stories. So it's really heavy on fiction. And there's only one poem by Donna Grahman. And then there's a memoir. The first one in this section is by Manny Culver, and it's called The Knowing. And it's kind of, it's sinister and haunting. That's all I'm going to say about it. You'll have to read it. And then the section ends with a memoir by Deanne Lyons that is haunting. It's a workplace piece. And if you're ever, you know, in your basement or on a lower floor and you think you hear footsteps above you, you'll think about this piece. It's a really good piece. And there's a few workplace stories in this one. Manny Culver has another one, and Susan Muhlenbeck has another one, and they're placed next to each other. And they both talk about workplace situations that we hope would never happen. One is handled with some real dark humor, and one is, it's creepy. And then we have some science fiction-y, the kind that you, visitors from another planet, or what happens if you end up in different worlds, and what, you know, how do you come back? And then there are three that are very supernatural that are in order. And I'm not going to touch on every story in here, but Singularity and Connection by Paul D. Elner. The supernatural was his specialty. And then C.S. Boyd, which is Cleora, had Well Wishing. And those are all very supernatural. There's a lot of reading that'll take you to different places in that section. And now I'm going to turn it over to Kate.
Thank you, Mary Jo. Hello, beautiful people. Thank you for zooming in this evening. I had the honor to work on two sections of the Behind Our Eyes third anthology, A Literary Sunburst. As I worked on Literary Smorgasbord and author biographies, I had the express pleasure to do two of my favorite things: meet new people and eat. No. I didn't eat the new people. For the section Literary Smorgasbord, we chose 13 pieces that were of literary value and mentioned food. I contacted the writers and asked for the recipes to the food in their piece. I kitchen tested each of the 27 recipes to assure a totally blind person, like me, could make the food come out right. I put on a little weight, but it was well worth it. The recipes are user-friendly and delicious. I'd like to thank Marilyn for coming up with the section name. She was thinking of using it for a different section, but she gave in to my begging to use it for this section. Her Aunt Jo's ambrosia salad from Anniversary Notes is included and is an all-time favorite. Valerie's memoir, A Cooking Day, shared how to cook a full pork dinner, complete with candied sweet potatoes and banana pudding. The buttermilk pancakes that were made with so much love in Terry's Buttermilk Pancakes and a Mother's Love will warm the cockles of your heart as well as make you hungry. John and I went round and round whether his cranberry sauce was a condiment that might be part of a sandwich or a relish to be served as a side dish. After you read John's haiku, let us know what you think. I suspect it might be a regional preference. In Carla McInnes Rockefeller's heartwarming memoir, Socks and Sensibilities, this Canadian lady explains why her thick socks are memorable and shared her recipe for her signature French onion soup. Would it be a spoiler if to tell you her secret ingredient that she adds to her onion soup is wine? Oh, well, now I spilled it, right? You'll never guess her secret ingredient for her lemon bread. In Uncle Lenny's Proud Pond Cake by Kevin Brown, I am glad he included the improved Aunt Sally's potato salad because the original salad really sounded awful. I will admit that my experience with fried chicken has been limited to Colonel Sanders fried chicken. I also admit I've never tasted a crispier outside with a tender, juicy inside than Kevin Brown's homemade crispy fried chicken. Oh, dear Gussie, I'm so drool. Speaking of drooling, we didn't forget our furry friends. Mary Jo's Sammy Sings the Blues includes a recipe for chicken jerky and frozen yogurt pops. My guide dog preferred the chicken, but I liked the frozen yogurt pops. Yes, I taste tested everything I cooked. I did use the recipes in the anthology as they are printed. I could keep raving about these pieces and recipes for people and critters in literary smorgasbord, but let me go to my other favorite topic, meeting new people. Now, this is the bios, and this is actually the end of the book. So Mary Jo and Marilyn are going to have more stories, but I was jumping in here. This anthology contains the creative efforts of 46 writers. We are a very diverse group of people writing on many themes in many genres. Our backgrounds include hailing from Korea, Canada, Bosnia, South Africa, and the United States of America. We are a nurse, a nun, a federal government paper pusher, a Texas horsewoman, a parent, a birder, grocery store clerk, a professor of microbiology and pathology, a social worker, and a mental health counselor, to mention a few. For several writers, this is their first publication since appearing in the Magnets and Ladders magazine. The common thread that weaves this beautiful tapestry of people together is that we love to write. It was a privilege to virtually break bread and meet each writer as I helped to edit this anthology. Please keep in mind that each author is the copyright owner, and he or she has given BOE his or her permission to include his or her piece in this fundraising anthology. If you purchase a book at the editor's price and give it as a gift or donation, that is well and good and very admirable. If you purchase a book at the editor's price and resell it, that profit should, professionally and ethically, be paid to BOE. BOE does not receive royalties on editors' books that are sold at that price. Again, thank you for Zooming in this evening. Mary Jo, back to you.
Okay, and thanks for clarifying that about the book sales, Kate. Okay, so the next section is looking back, and that's the section where all of the pieces that are either memoir or we actually had a couple of historical fiction pieces. And there were 21 selections in this one. This was my biggest section. And we had all sorts of fun in this section. We started out with Roller Coaster to Darkness by Adnana Sarik. And that was a wonderful memoir about a young mother's heroic efforts to save her baby. And then it ended with A Yankee Woman's Love. And that was Kate Chamberlain's creative nonfiction piece about a woman reading her grandmother's diary. We also had, did you say Automatic Washing Machine? And this was a wonderful piece by Ernie Jones about his experience as an 11-year-old boy having to do the family laundry in the winter. And it was painstakingly told, detail by detail, about what he had to do the family laundry with a washing machine that was not very automatic. And it was below 20 degrees out, and this 11-year-old boy had to do the laundry, and it was an incredible piece. We also had another, talking about, you know, older technology, Elizabeth Fioretti had The Gas Furnace, about the family's first gas furnace and her grandfather's fascination with that. It was a poem about that. And then Innocence in the Sand by Leonard Touchner, about a young boy's first crush and deep friendship with a girl on a family vacation. And then Greg Pruitt will take you into the storm sewers of Flint, Michigan during the 1950s. And then Sally Rosenthal has a poem, Kathleen, in 1927. And Abby Johnson Taylor has A Mother's Secret, which are two very different pieces about mothers. One's a poem and one is a memoir. And it's about mothers at very different stages of life and very different situations. Now I'm going to turn it back over to Marilyn. And she's going to talk about the next section.
Okay. Thank you, Mary Jo. This section is called Whispers in the Grass. And although we don't have a single piece dedicated to grass, when you hear these pieces and how they link up, you can imagine the whispers in the grass about what the grass has witnessed. Are you captivated by stories from survivors of natural disasters? Do you like wildlife pieces or pieces about children and their pets or on with farm animals? maybe you're interested in a particular geographical part of the country, because we cover a lot of them, specifically the places people have been. Also, we just have most of the things about nature you'd be interested in and maybe haven't heard much about, like meteor showers or the idea of light dancing on the water. Marcia Wick had a preoccupation with elephants. She had won one at a fair as a child and acquired another one along the way. While her vision was still good enough, she wanted a close-up view of an elephant in the wild. Went to Africa to get it. John W. Smith was determined to find another big orange cat like the one he played with as a child in his grandparents' backyard. Nobody knew Washington State like Ernie Jones. He takes us on a tour of Mount St. Helens after the eruption. He and his wife, Dorothy, had been up there on various vacations before and were devastated by what they saw after. Tara Inman wrote a beautiful piece about a horrible summer. She was moving sandbags and trying to stay up enough to contribute to the shifts, trying to push back the Mississippi River during a flood. Family strife, family secrets came to bear, the relationships she held dear, and it was a hard time for her. She wrote a beautiful memoir about it. Mary Jo and her family took a trip to Australia and walked among various forms of wildlife, including the joeys, the young kangaroos just out of their mama's pouches. There were several stories about children or young people growing up and preparing for life. Burns Taylor, a person I knew in high school at the School for the Blind in Texas, wrote a story about visiting his grandparents in the summer and meeting up with a fawn who he loved. But of course, you can't take a wild animal like that, make him a pet. When he came back at Thanksgiving, the fawn was gone, and he had to learn some sad reality about what it is to be an admirer of wildlife. Cleora was tested by a big rooster who didn't think she belonged in a hen house gathering eggs. She grew up a lot during that experience, but she won. The old pear tree has seen better days, but it bears up, if you will, as best it can, producing some fruit. The swallows await the spring and the greening of leaves. Winter flowering plants poke up their heads. Linda Lambert wrote that one. And they're looking for the sunshine that will surely come in the spring. Tourists leave Montauk on the eastern end of Long Island. Sorry, Brad. In the fall. Because, the tourists have done with their thing. Maybe they're looking for a meteor shower like Allie Parsons found the year before. Annie Chappetta wrote a beautiful story about a young man with a death wish on a cold winter's night. Amber eyes and warm bodies strengthen him to face tomorrow. Family life gets warm and funny, according to Jeff Blodden and his entourage, when the winter winds blow cold. Landscapes change, the leaves are gone, and the salt is on the road. But yes, Alice Moss's garden is still awaiting her attention, except she's shaping snowflakes into piles instead of moving flower pots and planters around. Our gifts from nature are worth our protection and our appreciation. They usually cost a lot less what we pay in the store for gifts. They don't require a lot of technology. And they don't take batteries. I'm going to turn it back over to Mary Jo.
Okay, so that was all of the sections of our anthology. Now, how do you get it, right? And that is the challenging question. It is available in print or ebook, but I don't know how accessible the ebook is at Barnes & Noble, but it is available in print at Barnes & Noble. It's probably the best place to get it. Ebook, it's available from Smashword, and those books are very readable. It's also on Bookshare right now, and it has been purchased by NLS in the ebook form, and it will be recorded by them. When I looked yesterday, it wasn't in process yet, but it's coming from NLS. Amazon is still a challenge. There are print books, and I hear this all the time from BOE members. I saw it on Amazon. It is on Amazon in print. Third-party sellers acquire the book, I'm guessing from draft to digital. There are a number of booksellers that draft to digital distributes to, and some of those people are putting it on Amazon. And so that is, and it's at all sorts of prices. So in that way, it is available on Amazon in print. The first anthology is available in Braille and print from NLS and in print on Amazon. The second anthology is available in print and Kindle format on Amazon. And it's also available in digital download from Bard. And then, like I said, our anthology is coming to Bard, but right now it's available on Bookshare. Does anybody have any questions?
Hey, this is Annie. If anyone has a question, you can unmute yourself and ask your question. Just say your name first to make sure you don't step over somebody else.
This is Marlene, and I would like to know how entries got chosen for the anthologies. Did you take from Magnuson Letters? Did you ask for submissions? And you have some people in the books as well who are not role members, and that's excellent too. Thank you.
Okay. We took selections that were in Magnets and Ladders, and that's how non-BOE members are in the book. Then we also took submissions. And if I remember right, submissions were only open to BOE members.
Yes.
So those were the two ways, but probably 80 or 90% of what's in the book was in Magnets and Ladders at some point. But then we did take new submissions. Like I said, one person that I can remember for sure did not want a piece that we'd selected in the anthology because they wanted to submit something new.
Can I say something, Mary Jo? We used at least one piece from the 2016, 10 years writing together, anniversary edition, and that was Tara Inman's piece about the Minnesota flood.
Oh, okay, right. She didn't resubmit that. You're right.
I don't think so.
No, I think you just asked her to have a written copy.
Yes.
Right.
Any other questions?
This is Marcia. I just have a comment. So it must have been the second anthology if that was the one available on Bard. That's how I discovered this group. And I just randomly got it from the Talking Book Library. I didn't even request it. I'd never heard of Behind Our Eyes. And I'm listening to this compilation of essays and oh my gosh, there's something by Deanna Noriega. I know Deanna Noriega. And oh my gosh, there's something by Rebecca Shields. Oh my gosh, I know Rebecca Shields. And I was just flabbergasted that these people I knew through ACB and the blind community here in Colorado were published in this anthology. And, you know, I went to work and got connected with BOE that way. So it was invaluable to me. It really changed my life.
Well, that's good.
Thank you for your comments. That was nice.
This is Alice, and I love that story, Marcia. I had never heard that before, but that's just delightful. And those connections are just really such a part of Behind Our Eyes. And I think what we do and try to do and have done in the past. But speaking in comparisons, Marilyn, I just wonder how this experience compared to your editing of the first anthology. And Kate, I wonder how this experience compared to your editing of the second anthology. And just so Mary Jo doesn't feel left out, Mary Jo, how did this experience, you know, as far as the rewards and so forth, when the product was finished, how did that compare with finishing an issue of Magnets and Ladders?
What I can remember from the first one is that we were such newbies. We were really learning everything from the ground up, and I had a wonderful copy editor in Florida who I ran everything by because I wasn't sure I was quite an editor. And I learned and figured out, yeah, I think I really am. After that one, we had a short deadline because iUniverse was about to go out of business or merge with Author House. And so we were forced to do a lot of work a lot faster, but there were only 27 of us at that time, and we didn't take pieces from anywhere except behind our eyes. So it was just glorious. I know when I found out it was being done by NLS, I put a message up on the list that said, hallelujah, because we didn't know whether we'd make that cut or not. But it was a very rewarding experience for a young group who didn't quite have our feet wet yet.
I can address the second anthology. I actually inherited it, because Bobby LaChance got an excellent start on it, and Marilyn had all the sections set up, and they had the publisher, Pat Gott, all lined up. It just needed someone to spearhead everything to the finish, and I did do that. And it was really very difficult because I did not have enough of a network to really support me, what I was doing. I had a couple of people here at home, and it was difficult to get it going. But I think the end product is a quality book, and I was delighted to hear that it was influential in bringing in a new BOE member. So thank you. That's the BOE too.
I'm trying to think how to compare the two, because Magnets and Ladders, in some ways, I almost, you know, it's a lengthy magazine that I put out twice a year, or that we put out twice a year. I work with the committees, and then, you know, I put it out together and edit and copy edit and get it up there twice a year. With the anthology, you know, I thankfully had Marilyn and Kate, and we divided it up. There's no way I could have done the whole thing on my own. For one thing, I was doing Magnets and Ladders, and through most of the process, I was working full time, so that it wouldn't have happened. And I felt like they had the experience from the other two anthologies to draw back on, to talk about what happened or didn't happen. What was challenging, I think, and different in this situation was, we didn't have a publisher that came to us and said, we want to work on your book. It was we're going to work on a book, and then we're going to find somebody to publish it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And that was a little bit different. Putting together the anthology in some ways was the same as Magnets and Ladders, in that we had sections, and I stole some of my titles from Magnets and Ladders, and the pieces I was familiar with because I had already edited them once, but some of them still needed some additional work to make them book ready. But the whole formatting and getting them ready for a book was entirely different. We needed to be concerned about a lot of things that you don't have to be concerned with online, like how many characters per line can you have if you're using poetry? And thankfully, Jane figured out a way in EdSharp, which is the program I was using, to figure out how many characters per line, because we figured out, and thankfully Alice and Linda gave me some advice from working with DLD about how many characters, and how they didn't, I think it was Alice in particular said she didn't want, you know, that poems could wrap around where you didn't want them to.
Right.
So that was a lot of information that I didn't deal with Magnets and Ladders. It was very different. But and then I had to remember sometimes, okay, which one am I working on? So how do I really need this to look? So that was a little bit different.
I thought it was very helpful that the three of us worked well together.
Yes.
Yes. We all had some
Absolutely.
different ideas and we could bounce things off each other. You know, if we had a feeling about something, it was helpful to have other people that validated what we thought about something.
Yes.
And we also had Brad and Valerie, although they weren't editing, they were people we could go to about opinions.
And sometimes things, when we were debating whether to include this piece or that piece in a section, at least I know I had this experience, I would go to my subcommittee that were in, their job was to help me put that section together, and I'd say, okay, we're going to be down to a vote here. Let's see who wants this piece or that piece included. And because you had limits, sometimes you just couldn't include everything, and some had to go.
Right. And sometimes, yeah, something just didn't fit with something. And then I actually found myself in a situation where I was looking for something that would go together well with a piece. And I can't even remember not what I needed it to go with. And I thought, oh my gosh, that piece of Peter's that we decided not to put in would really go well with this piece. And I was building my section and my committee was kind of on the borderline with it. And we just had so many pieces, and I thought, oh, what the heck? So I wrote Peter, and of course he was happy to have it put in.
And sometimes when the author would make a choice, we would really rather have had piece from them or than that piece, but the author was in charge of which of his material went in. Absolutely. It's like too bad if we saw it a different way. We had to work around it because it was the author's prerogative to decide. If we had four pieces and he could only have three, he had to make the choice.
Then the author had to decide which of those wasn't going to go in. Right.
This is Abby. It sounds like you did things a little bit differently from the way we usually do magnets and ladders. I'm on the fiction and poetry committees for magnets and ladders, and usually Mary Jo sends us the submissions and then we kind of grade them. Like we give them an A if they're a keeper, B if they need work, and C if they are should be tossed into the slush pile. And so I'm just wondering now, maybe you could explain how your committees, apparently it sounded like you got together and read through the pieces and then decided which would go in the anthology. Could you maybe explain that a bit?
We did sort of the same thing. If pieces got a lot of C's, like with magnets and ladders, if a piece got mostly C's, then it wasn't considered for publication. And the same thing happens with magnets and ladders. We'll have a piece where almost everybody will give it A's and then one person will give it a C. Or the other way around, everybody gives it a C and one person gives it an A. Well, that one person's A isn't enough to put something in.
Right.
And usually we don't, with magnets and ladders, I don't go back to the committees and say, okay, what do you think we should put in? Except if we have too many book excerpt submissions.
Oh, okay.
Then, I think there was one time I think we had, I don't know how many we had, and I sent all of them to all the committee members and said, which ones do you like the best? But
so in a way, the pieces were pre-selected because they were already published in the Magnus and Ladders. I think that helped selection too.
Yes.
Yes.
This is Annie. Before we go to closing remarks, I have to ask this question. Will there be a fourth anthology in the future?
That's a board decision.
That's a board decision.
And you have to have an editor that's willing to take it on too. Somebody has to wrangle the team. Even though on the first one, I was one of the critiquers, but there were only 27 of us and we had 18 months worth of things we had shared up by telephone. Then we got our e-list up and stuff and we started sharing there. So you can kind of gauge a little bit how your pieces are working from how many responses you get. But as the numbers increase, I find I skim a lot more because if the title doesn't look interesting or the subject doesn't look interesting, I'm too busy to read everything that's posted to the list. So it kind of is a winnowing process on that basis. So if you really like something, certainly respond and let the author that you know that you really liked it and suggest where they might get it published. That kind of thing is helpful, I think. Because there, with only 27 of us, I had 10 pieces chosen for the first one. And I was surprised, really, because, of course, I didn't choose them. I wasn't on the committees that chose them. But, you know, that, so we weren't really reviewing our own work when we were doing that. We were handed pieces maybe in our genre to look at.
Right.
And so we try to make it as even-handed as we can right from the beginning. And as our numbers increase, this last one, I got one poem in. And that's fine because I'm really happy we are able to give new writers a chance to get a book with their stuff in it.
That's one of the criteria what I used for the second anthology. I made a very, very big effort to include at least one piece from everybody who submitted pieces. There was only one piece that absolutely didn't fit in that I wasn't able to use. But other than that, I feel very good that we had 65 writers in that second anthology.
Deanna, I thought you had three in this anthology.
I remember the rain one. I don't remember.
You had the I can't think of the title of it now. The one where you were a child riding the horse.
Yes. I've sent it to the list and can't remember how it got. I don't remember if it was published in Magnets or Letters.
It was. It was in Magnets and Letters and it was in the anthology.
Okay.
Yeah. It and was then a there poem. Was another one.
Yeah, it was a poem I found that was one of the oldest ones I'd ever written when I was a young girl remembering my childhood in Texas between the ages of 6 and 8. Yeah.
I didn't mention it tonight because I didn't mention every piece.
No. Yeah, we couldn't detail. Mention every piece. Could, there were 99 pieces. We would, you know, we'd be here till 11 or 12 at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no, speaking of
I
time,
I haven't read the whole thing, so I haven't really looked to find out how many I had. But, you know, if I'm just always honored when something I've written catches and holds with somebody and resonates with them, because that's what writing's all about. Yeah. And I'm not a writer that ever expects to make a living by writing. So I'm a writer who uses my writing as a way of working through the issues in my life at any one time. And when I wrote that poem as a little girl, I was sad because that horse I had ridden had been sold after I lost my vision completely.
Hmm.
And so I was remembering a happy time when I had a pony.
This is Marcia, and I'm not on the board, but I can only speculate if there's going to be a fourth anthology. First of all, it takes money to produce the anthology. And so hopefully part of what tonight is about is promoting the anthology so people will buy it so we can get a return on our investment. And then maybe we'll have money in the treasury to do another one, right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
That is very helpful.
Yeah, one of the things you can all do is get a couple of copies of it. And if you have a chance to be a speaker somewhere at the public library, wherever, you can take your books that, because I did. I was at a living library thing a couple of weeks ago at Columbia College, and I took copies of my books, my personal books that I have had published, and I took a copy of an anthology with me. I didn't have all of them in hard copy that I could take. So I did have a copy that I had bought for my husband. And so I took that one, you know, that kind of thing. If you take them, then people might want, if they glance through it and they something catches them, they might want a copy.
Okay. Closing remark?
I think I pretty much said everything there is to say.
I'm going back and re-cooking some of those recipes.
Good for you. Yeah. Marilyn?
I don't think I have anything else to say except that I'm still as proud of it as I was the day it was finished. And yeah, I would love to participate in doing something like that again. I begged Mary Jo, please let me do 2 sections.
All right. Well, now it's been recorded, so that means, you know, you can't wiggle out of it.
Well, she's been working hard since the first one, I think, Marilyn. You were I was, you know, there in the initial group when we were just talking on by phone.
Oh, I was too. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, if no one else has anything else that they want on the recording, I'm going to end the recording so Marlene doesn't have too much to edit. And then we could stay on and talk after that, if that's okay. Well,
thank you, Annie and Marlene. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.